Hello again, Gooners. Glad you could join us again. Did I say us? Well, yeah. There is more than me today. Believe it or not, yes. Coming up later, we've got Fizzy's Call. Fizzy's Call. I want to get Fizzy's Call. So Fizzy will be calling later. We've also got the Mental Manx commenting on things that are not Manx. Or, for that matter, mental. But before we do that, we've got to talk about the latest news. Well, the latest news, of course, you all know, Emmy Martinez is gone. Apparently, the fee is £16 million, and it could go up to £20 million. Obviously, I've gone on record before saying I wasn't very keen on this transfer happening. It's not all bad, though. There is another player lined up to come in to take his place. Whether it's quite the same level is another story, but he could be one day. Runarsson is coming in, apparently, but the deal's not a done deal just yet, so we await developments there. But the Icelandic international goalkeeper apparently has already had a medical. He's a lot younger than Martinez, if I pronounce it closer to the correct version. That's how it probably should sound. So who knows? Perhaps we will have another backup keeper at Arsenal in the very near future. Emi, clearly too good to be a backup goalkeeper. Personally, if it were me, as much as I really rate Leno, I think Leno's a great goalkeeper, I would have let Emi stay the number one for now. And I would just say Arsenal have two number ones, but we know that doesn't always work, does it? When you think about how many captains there were under Emery, it started to get ridiculous. So perhaps Arsenal just need one number one rather than two number ones. But personally, that's the way I would have gone with it. I'm really not best pleased about Emi leaving. Coming up later, we'll be talking about the dilemma that involves Eddie and Ketia. We'll be talking about that, or I will. And of course, the best news of all, I started off with the bad news, probably not the way to go. I didn't even ask you. I didn't say, would you like the good news first and the bad news second? But that's the way I've done it the other way around. Of course, the great news, it's not even good news, it's great news, Auba signing a 3-year deal. Now, some people would say, after we got burnt, Arsenal got burnt with the situation regarding Ozil, after he signed that lucrative deal, that was the last time we saw him play well, or really well in an Arsenal shirt. I suppose he had the odd reasonably good game, and that was about it, for various reasons. Let's not go into those now, but clearly things could have been an awful lot better than they were. But in the case of Auba, it was a no-brainer. He had to sign, and if it goes pear-shaped from here on in, no one's going to complain. Well, at least I hope not, because Auba is just phenomenal, let's face it. And well, I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to hand you over to Fizzy Call.
Right, I'm with Fizzy. You're going to tell us all about the game yesterday. What were your thoughts on it? Hello? Generally? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly. I thought, we played well. I thought we played quite well. There were lots of impressive performances. I thought, Gabriel, aside from the first 5 minutes, there was that slip, that little bit of miscommunication with him and Leno, and Leno just instantly showed how good he is. And I feel sorry for Martinez, we can talk about that later, but aside from that, I thought Gabriel played well. Some of the stats I saw, he had the most passes out of the whole 22 players, most successful passes, etc. After that hiccup, he looked really, really good. And credit to him, like Arteta mentioned it yesterday, he hasn't played for 6 months. Wow. It's a new club, new league, etc. And he looked good. And of course, he'll play against better teams, but it's always nice to see, and getting a goal as well, it's fantastic. Willian, you would expect Willian to settle pretty quickly because he's played in the league for so long, and he did. He had a free kick, he got two assists.
Yeah, he was very unlucky not to score himself.
Aubameyang for that third goal was very similar to Saka's in the Charity Shield. It was kind of almost a like for like goal, really. I thought Xhaka played well. I thought Elneny played well.
That was a surprise.
I was impressed. I was surprised at the starting formation. William was out on the right. They all seemed to play really well. Oh, and I think, you know, the first half, it was a bit slow.
Yeah.
It was a bit boring, which is to be expected because it's the first game of the season. And I think, you know, everyone's finding their feet. But, you know, we got the goal early on. And I think that settled us down, getting that early goal, that goal early on.
And what about the crowd, the lack of a crowd? Because I had a pretty unusual conversation with Marcus about this, because Marcus was saying, well, the fact that there is no crowd at Craven Cottage means that Arsenal got a better chance. And I said, well, even when they've got a crowd there, they're not that loud at Fulham. So I don't think it would have made a huge difference. In fact, the Arsenal away support would have been louder than the Fulham home support.
I would agree. I'd agree. I've been to Fulham. I haven't watched Fulham play Arsenal, but I have been to Fulham. And yeah, they're not that loud. They're not one of they're certainly not intimidating.
Not at all.
Like that.
Yeah.
It's a very sort of middle class sort of club. And the away fans sit with the home fans in one of the stands. It's like mixed. It's quite weird. So it's quite like leisurely. It's almost like going to a game of cricket sometimes, that sort of atmosphere.
It's like, don't you know, gentlemen?
I see his point.
Yeah.
I see his point.
Yeah.
If you think about our fixture list, we've got, I can get it up now, we've got Liverpool away.
Wow.
We've got, I think, let me just get it up. I'm on my computer. We've got some really tough games, the first few games, haven't we? Our fixture list is pretty tough.
It's best to get those out of the way while before the crowds start coming back, or if they start coming back.
Yeah, we've got obviously the Carabao Cup at Leicester, so that's a bit of a not exactly easy. We've got Liverpool at the end of the month, City on the 17th of October, and then United away at the end of October. Yeah. And we play Leicester at home, sandwiched between the two Manx clubs. So
that's
not an easy start to the season. But going with Marcus's point, I'd much rather go to Anfield, Old Trafford, maybe not the Etihad, but certainly Old Trafford and Anfield with no fans.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
And I think that you could. I don't know if I would. But you could attribute that possibly what some of the reason why we won the games that we did in the lockdown was because of. There was no fans. Maybe. I don't know how big a factor it is, but certainly away from home, I'm glad we've got these games out of the way now.
And I think he also
Leeds
said,
as well, actually. Leeds is mid-November as well. That won't be. And Spurs is beginning of December.
Oh, wow.
So you look at that, we've got Spurs, not Leeds, I'm like United, City and Liverpool all the way, all done before December starts. You know, that does make for sort of a... If we can sort of keep in the sort of title race, or not title race, but not too far away from, you know, the top few spots, then that'll put us in good stead, I think.
I thought
we've done all right. Second half, we've got that, you know, good to see Gabriel's got the score, and then Uber's goal, and it was dead after that, wasn't it? Like, Arsenal looked like scoring, to be fair, a couple more times. I watched the highlights this morning.
Yeah,
they look good. I loved how they passed out from the back. They are slowly getting better than that.
Yeah,
I was watching it with a friend, and even he said he was like, he was impressed by how well we were passing from the back. And that third goal, was just a team goal, wasn't it?
Yeah,
there was a little bit of a juggle from Elneny. There was because they were trying to press, and we played around the press. I think it bodes well. We look like a decent.
And did you see Holding with his dribble? He beat a few players.
Yes, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, he's got confidence. I think that's what makes me quite, very sort of positive about Arteta.
Yeah.
Is that you've got players like Elneny, who spent a year at Besiktas, has come back, and Elneny's been basically told, look, if you work hard and you give me a reason to include you, then I'll try and give you a chance. I'll give you an opportunity. I'll try and give you an opportunity on the pitch. And I think, we are short on midfielders.
Yeah.
But it says something. And maybe Ceballos wasn't fit or wasn't completely fit. I don't know. But yeah, fair play to him. You know, Zaka's another example of this, isn't he? You know, Zaka was in the lowest of the low positions come when Arteta joined. You know, Zaka was persona non grata, wasn't he?
He was.
Like nobody, me included, I wanted him rid. He wanted to go. And Arteta has managed to polish that turd pretty well because Zaka's looking good.
Yeah, to me, he looks all right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sold on him.
There's always been that footballer inside him. He's just never been able to sort of show it.
And even though I complain about him, I still think, when I think back to Wenger's time when he had Danilson and Diaby, I prefer Xhaka to both of them, actually. And even though I've been very critical of him, he does have the odds of game.
Yeah, Danilson was a funny one. He was a bit of a crap, wasn't he? Diaby, I felt for, because just because of his physicality.
It's an injury, really.
Yeah, he's someone that I think Arsenal are crying out for now. We need, we do need a bit of creativity in the midfield. Mm. We do need that sort of Thomas Partey.
Yeah.
The rumours about him possibly coming. Whether Arsenal are going to pay the money, I think Arsenal are going to have to sell players before they can even think about spending money.
And on that note,
they cancelled Mkhitaryan's contract.
Yeah, that was good news.
Well, they've still got Ozil on £350,000 a week. They're going to give Aubameyang a brand spanking new one.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have to be quite clever. They need to get a few players off their wage bill. I was reading The Grove. It's a blog.
Yeah, I know that one.
It's really, really good. I like
it. Yeah, I like it too.
And he's very bright. He's very sharp.
Yeah.
He talks about the wage bill. And if you look at some of the players that we've got in that club, that you would happily move on. The amount of money that frees up for wages is astronomical. You know, absolutely astronomical. And the only thing about Ozil is, and I think Arteta will do this, I suspect Arteta will try with Ozil, but he'll say to him, look, you know, it's World Cup, is it the Euros or World... It's the Euros, isn't it, next year?
Yeah, Euros, they've been put back.
If you're not playing, you're not going to get picked for Germany.
Yeah, but so he's retired, hasn't he, really? He's retired.
We don't even care. I don't think Arsenal will be that arsed about a transfer fee. They just want to get him off the wage bill.
Of course, yeah, but no one wants to take him on.
Yeah.
And I don't think the club can even subsidise it.
He needs to sort of take a pay cut if he wants to play.
Yeah, but he doesn't really want to play, does he?
Euros.
So it seems. But he's not... I don't think he's going to play for Germany again anyway. Didn't he retire? I think he retired. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah, I know he upset... part of Germany because of his
political
Turkey comments, because
he's
pro that Erdogan, isn't he? Now, I don't know anything about the situation, but I know that it's got quite a divisive I'm sitting on the fence here, Joe. We're not going to get political.
No, we're not doing that.
I know
just
it's quite
saying...
a divisive issue I think in Germany it's a bit of a divisive issue.
Yeah,
of course. He's not exactly very popular because of what side of the fence he sits on.
Yeah,
there.
It's more that.
It's a shame. Like, if I'm a professional footballer, it is a career, it is a job, and you do get paid to provide a service. But at the same time, and I don't think Ozil's any different here. You want to play? Would you really want to sit on your ass for a year?
Of course not. I wouldn't.
Earning money, it's.
It wouldn't make me feel very happy.
And Arsenal was stupid.
Yeah. But I just think, Ozil's of a different nature.
It's like me saying to you, Joe, all right, we're going to sign you to this new school, but you're only going to teach little kids, you're not going to teach the big kids.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that.
You're not going to teach A-level and GCSE.
Or just do admin all the time.
More interesting. That's what I like doing. Mm. Teaching 11-year-olds isn't exactly thrilling, but teaching 16-year-olds is good fun.
It's an intellectual
pursuit, and I think Rosal, it's like, you go to training, but you're not going to play in the games. Mm. Then you just think, it doesn't sit well with me. I don't believe that Ozil would be that self-destructive. Maybe he will be, but only time will tell. But
it's really hard to know what's going on in his head. Actually, it's really hard.
Yeah,
to know.
Well, supposedly when the players took a pay cut. He refused to.
Yeah.
And the club leaked that, or someone in the club leaked that he was the one that refused to take the pay cut. Apparently others refused to as well, but their names never got released. So I think that was maybe a dirty ploy by Arsenal to try and push him away.
A little bit on that. Because he said he felt forced.
Stubborn.
He asked questions and they didn't answer his questions. So he said, until you answer my questions, this is me trying to state Ozil's side as far as I can tell. And yeah. they didn't answer what but, you know, yeah, the query.
Same Guendouzi, but yeah, it's quite telling. With Ozil, nobody wants to pay his wages. But then you've got people like Guendouzi. Mm. Nobody wants him. Nobody, you know, or he's actually supposed to... No, I got that wrong. Supposedly about three clubs are in for him. Emery, he's in Spain, Emery. He's back in Spain. I can't remember what team. I think Villarreal, I don't know. Might be wrong. But he wants him. Yeah. But Guendouzi went, no, I want to go to a big club. And you're just kind of like... So Arsenal have been saddled with him. Now, with him, you know, he's I think I've got at least 2 more years left on his deal. And he's young. And yeah, he wasn't a massive outlet. I don't think we paid that much amount of money for him. So it's not a massive... Well, they'll just put him in the reserves. But yeah, it's telling.
They're both training, though, now. Ozil and Guendouzi are both training.
The only player that looks like he's going to go is Martinez.
Yeah, and that's upsetting. And that was the reason. That was the reason I didn't feel as buoyant as I should.
From his point of view, I get it. Yeah. I do. I completely get it. Because he wants to play. You know, he's the complete opposite of Ozil, isn't he? He wants to play. And he probably, quite rightly, feels, well, I put myself in the shot market. You know, I won the FA Cup with Arsenal. You know, I played in all those big games when Leno was injured. I can do it at a high level.
Mm.
I now need to be able to prove myself on a weekly basis. And so I want to play full time. And so I think it's, I don't know who it is.
Aston Villa.
Who's signing for, but
Aston Villa.
Villa.
Yeah, I mean,
it's Villa.
I'm not happy about
20
it.
Mil. But we'll have to spend some of that money on getting a second keeper, won't we? Unless... Is it Matt Macey, the third choice?
Yeah, he's third choice, and he might go as well. Red somewhere.
Yeah, so we're in for the keeper from Brentford. Apparently.
Yeah, I saw that. But he's going to cost 10.
Obviously, I don't think wages isn't going to be too much of a drag, and the transfer fee hopefully is not too much. But yeah, I'd rather we reinvest that 20 mil somewhere else.
Yeah, same here.
It's the players that we don't want to go that could possibly go. The Lacazettes, the Bellerins.
Yeah.
I would keep both of them. I think we need to get rid of the excess centre-halves that we have. Get rid of Socrates. And then get rid of one of Mustafi or Chambers. I don't think we needed both of them.
They're both
We've got Mari.
Yeah.
We've obviously got Saliba, Gabriel, Holding. You know, Tierney plays there. That says something. You know, Tierney's done great there.
Yeah, he's done very well.
Even though he almost plays as a left back anyway, doesn't he? Like, you see how they work it.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday you had Holding and Gabriel almost as two centre halves. Tierney just pushes so wide to the left. Maitland Niles comes into the middle to overload the midfield. And Tierney will just put balls over the top. That's how we got the penalty against City. And he's done it a load of times yesterday as well. He just puts that, it's not even a diagonal ball, is it, really? It's quite a straight ball, but it's a bit diagonal coming in, I suppose, over the top. And it's worked quite well. And that's a tactic that Arsenal have done. And it confuses teams.
They look pretty fluid. I like the way they're moving.
He said it confuses teams because you overload the midfield and the players don't know what to do. The opposition don't know what to do. That's how we need to make some of the money. Socrates is, what, 100 grand a week off the wage bill?
Yeah.
So if you shift him, you shift maybe Mustafi. But again, you know, Socrates will leave. If we should be able to get rid of him.
I think so.
Kolasinac is another one. Clearly, he's not in favour.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's another 100 grand a week. And then you've got Mustafi, who's on, what, 60, 70? Got some absolute dead weight there, but we're going to have to sell. And I've said this to a friend. I said next year, if we can get top four this year, that'd be brilliant. That's got to be our target.
Yeah, for sure.
Next year we'll start to see, or hopefully next summer we will start to see more sort of Arteta players coming in. I think he's already had a bit of a stamp on it. He's clearly happy with Saliba. He's got Gabriel. He managed to keep Uber. Willian, I think, is a clever signing. The wages concern me a little bit, but it's only a 3-year deal.
But the wages, people were saying 200,000. I said he's not on 200, he's on 100. Just over 100.
Yeah, it's incentive based.
Yeah.
So it's like performance based, isn't it? So if he wins the Champions League for us, then he gets basically 200 grand a week. But if he's just yeah, he scores a few goals, blah, blah, blah. It's about 120, 130.
Which is not a lot.
But for a 32-year-old, yeah, for a three-year deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we'll get 2 good years out of him. If at I'm least. Honest, I think we'll get 2 good years out of him.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic about
it. So I think it's a worthwhile, and I think he's Premier League ready. You know, he's mustered.
Yeah,
you know,
really
he showed
is.
How classy he is yesterday.
Yeah.
Great so and Brazilian as well. Yeah, we've got that quite a bit of a Brazilian sort of thing.
They're on the same wavelength, so, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it helps. I think Arteta. I read somewhere. I think it was The Grove. He said Arteta speaks 5 languages. He's like another Wenger.
Oh
you
know, wow.
He communicates with all the best players in their home language. He speaks Spanish, Portuguese. I think obviously he speaks Spanish and English.
He's a smart guy.
I wouldn't be surprised if he speaks French. Like he's a clever guy.
Really? Yeah.
So I think he is another Wenger in the making, really.
Yeah. Or better than.
You know, the players loved him. I think Wenger's downfall was he just got a bit too stubborn and a bit too soft in the end.
Oh,
he
on that note.
Sort of cut his losses.
Because we've only got a couple of minutes, because this, I think the recording's going to stop in 2 by the looks of it, because I've got to delete stuff.
Okay.
But anyway, I was going to ask you this. What about his promotion to being manager? Some people said that's not a good thing. That he's that now that he's going to be on the same level as Edu, he could end up being another Wenger, like you said, and maybe being too powerful. I mean, I'm not sure how I feel about it right now. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Well,
I just don't know.
Clearly, the guy above him, that Vinay. I'm not even going to embarrass myself by saying his surname.
He's different.
He's running the club.
Yeah.
And then you've got on the similar level Edu and Arteta. Now, you could argue that Arteta's on the same level as Edu, but what experience necessarily does Edu have?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, he's relatively new to the game as well. And I think they are putting their faith in, you know, two young, you know, executive. When you think about executives, you don't think, 40-year-old. Especially with the inexperience they have. So I think it's a good thing. I think it says to him that we've got faith in you.
Yeah,
and he knows for the next 2 years he will be allowed to sort of try and manifest his ideas, and he'll have the confidence. And I think by promoting him as they've done, I think it's a show of faith. I think it's just that.
Because
he's not the boss.
No, he's not the boss.
And of course, it's a results-based business, isn't it? You know, if we have a stinker of a season this year, I don't think he'll be sacked, but I think they'll be sort of like maybe a bit more reluctant or, so it's, he's under pressure anyway. So I don't see it as a massive issue, to be honest. I think it's them showing Arteta that they're happy with what he's done and rewarding him. Actions speak louder than words, sort of thing.
Okay, all right, and just very quickly, because I've only got 30 seconds left on this.
Sure.
What about the West Ham game? Feeling confident?
Any prediction for sure. Well, they're a team in disarray, and open revolts. Players are openly revolting. So it's a game that Arsenal could very easily slip up because they'd be complacent, but. I think under Arteta, that's less likely than it is under Emery or Wenger. So hopefully, I think we'll get a result.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed the physical section. Now, coming up right now, the mental manx section. Okay, we've got a new title for this segment of the show, and it's called 30 Minutes of Nothing. We're not going to call it Heart of Darkness or the opposite in terms of light, whatever that is. I haven't worked it out yet. But I'm with Marcus Rash. As in terms, not
as
Rashford.
As I'm known. Marcus Rash, as I'm known. I actually believe this to be one of the weakest segments that's ever been done by Joe.
Yes.
I could be wrong.
And there are many to compete with this.
I believe it will be the weakest. But let's see.
Okay, well, that keeps our expectations low. And that ties in, segues in, as they say, with the forthcoming season. Obviously,
if you're an Arsenal fan.
He's not an Arsenal fan, but he can still give a comment. How did Arsenal look on the opening day of the season against
Fulham? I think Arsenal had... They couldn't have had a better game for them. They've got a team that's just been promoted who didn't have their fucking supporters behind them. they're playing away, but it's not away, is it? It's a training game. Of course Arsenal were going to win. They won convincingly, and I don't think they did anything wrong. I just think that this situation has suited Arsenal at least in that game massively. Yeah.
And I know we had this discussion during the game, but let's have it again. You talked about the lack of fans, and I said, rightly or wrongly, I said, well, Fulham's a ground I've been to a lot, and they're not really passionate fans. I don't mean it in a detrimental way, because I kind of like Fulham. They're my fourth or fifth or sixth team, and I do like them in that respect. And I've had hours and hours of entertainment there. However, their fans are not incredibly passionate. They're not loud, and they're not intimidating. So
I can't dispute that. I have been to Fulham and been in the home end at Fulham before myself, and absolutely you're right. But Fulham have not been in the Premier League for what, two seasons, right?
It's been a while.
This is their breakout game back in the league. I think that if they had their supporters there today, it would have made a big difference.
And it's always a banana skin when you take on a team that's just been promoted.
Well, it should have been
over the years. Yeah. So to come out 3-0 winners. I mean, were you impressed at all with Arsenal today?
No, I wasn't impressed. I thought that two of their goals were sweaty tap-ins, you know. I think they were always going to win that game. I don't think they...
It was scrappy.
I don't think they did anything amazingly impressive today. I think any Arsenal fan would agree.
How about defending? Was it better than normal?
Well, as you saw the first...
Things happening live here that I don't really want to disclose, but it's not good news.
It's Liverpool going 1-0 up against Leeds.
Well, maybe it's good news for some. But anyway, well, I'm thinking the right word here to create precipitation on your parade. But anyway, so. Aside from that, you know, you're so upset, mate. I've never seen you this upset. I didn't realise it's going to affect you this much. But anyway, so defensively, you didn't see any greater solidity about the Arsenal defence with Gabriel, who scored a goal on his debut, no less.
Absolutely, Gabriel did score a goal on his debut, but if you watch the first 5 minutes of the game, he nearly gave a goal away to Fulham. So, yeah, he didn't.
It was shaky.
He was shaky, but he ended up with a goal on his debut, so, you know, it's difficult to criticise him too much. Am I impressed by any single player in this match? No, I'm not. Because, of course, Arsenal should have won that game 3-0.
They're beating the likes of Fulham away.
They're beating the likes of Fulham without a team and without any support. They are beating a training team that had just moved up to...
It did feel like a training game. I'm not gonna pretend it didn't, but at the same time...
I don't think they've done anything special. I think they had to win that game. They won it convincingly.
But when you look at, they were heading the ball away a lot. When balls were coming in the box, I'm not saying it was a perfect match from an Arsenal perspective. There were balls going in the box I wasn't entirely happy with. And on that note, I would like to say, before I forget, the idea that Martinez is not even in the squad, which clearly means he's on the way to Aston Villa, for £60,000 a week, didn't make me feel that happy, I have to say. I mean, how would you feel as a Man U fan if a player who'd excelled in a cup final was going to be sold for perhaps something like £20 million? How would you feel about that? You've seen Martinez.
I'll be honest, mate. I'd be way more concerned about Ozil. I can't believe we're talking about Martinez. Why are we not talking about Ozil?
Because Martinez almost, well, I wouldn't say single.
Ozil is your top player that's making the most money at your club.
He's
not getting in the start.
But Martinez, if you had a goalkeeper, all right, let's try and imagine that you have a goalkeeper other than De Gea. I don't know. Who's your second goalkeeper?
Who? Sergio Ramos at the
right,
moment.
Say Sergio Ramos,
Sergio.
Whoever it was. Whatever that second goalkeeper's name is, come out. But let's just say he won you the cup more or less. Not single-handedly, but he had a massive, you know, there's a massive reason why you won that cup. How would you feel if you heard well, he wasn't in a team selection. He was in the Community Shield and he's out of the team all of a sudden. You don't know why. And that,
well, I'd be certain that this guy was about to sign for another club.
Yes. But how would that make you feel? Would you? I mean, of course, 3 points is a
wouldn't make me
points.
Feel anything. I would think, well, this guy's going to sign for another club and I don't need to think about him again.
Okay, but Marcus, let me ask you this.
Is that not accurate?
That's a reasonable answer, but I want to ask you this nevertheless. But I want to ask you this. You're the manager of a club. Right. Your goalkeeper's excelled. He's a reserve team goalkeeper. He's excelled because this is the Arsenal situation. You've got an excellent, a much better reserve team goalkeeper than you ever realised, and you're not paying him a lot. And now he wants to leave because he wants to be the first team goalkeeper, which is right. A fair point. Would you try to keep him? He's under contract for at least 2 years. Would you try to keep him, or would you just sell him for 20 million? What would you do in that? He's played about what? I don't know. Double figures in the recent season and kept a lot of clean sheets. In those circumstances, would you sell, or would you say, look, you're not going anywhere, mate?
I would talk to him.
Yeah.
I would. If I was the manager, I would speak to him. I would say, what do you want? Where do you want to be? Are you happy to be second choice, and we can give you some games here and there with the Carabao Cup or elsewhere? Or are you ambitious to do something else? That would be the conversation I would have with that player. And I think that they do have that conversation with those players. And I think that conversation is understood. If you want to talk about the most complicated goalkeeper position in world football, I would say it's Manchester United. I would say it's David De Gea, Dean Henderson, and Romero as well. So we've got Sergio Romero, who has actually never made a bad error when he has played for Manchester. He's never made an error. Then you've got Dean Henderson, who is well respected and has had a fantastic season over at Sheffield United. And then you've got David De Gea, who was the best goalkeeper in the world.
He was.
I don't think he is, and I don't think he has been for a number of years. I think that would be ridiculous for me to say that he is the best goalkeeper.
So how would you manage that situation? Because Leno is Arsenal's best keeper over a period of time. Not that long. He hasn't been there.
I don't think that Arsenal do have a good goalkeeper. I think they need to sign a top goalkeeper. I think Man United have 3 good goalkeepers. I think they're a very different situation between the two sides.
It's interesting to say that. I mean, because the only reason I say that is because Arsenal, yeah, their defence is not rated. The keepers have been more highly rated as of late. You know, when you think back to the day when it was Almunia as the first choice. See, I immediately want to laugh because that was the impression we, you know, Arsenal fans got. And Fabianski as a number one.
You will have to remind me of a time when Arsenal had a good defence and goalkeeper.
You've got to
a good back five.
David Seaman, yeah, obviously.
Well, Lehmann, I know David obviously. Seaman. I'm saying, can you tell
Since
me?
Then. Yeah, not a lot. Not a lot. But then Leno. I'm not saying he's been the best thing since sliced bread, but he's been.
I think Leno's a good goalkeeper. I just don't think he's up there.
You don't think he's world class. You don't think he's up there with.
Not yet. Well, De Gea, as we say,
he's out of the season. Wow, everybody's celebrating here. Say why, I think I'll let you work it out for yourself. So, Marcus has got some life back into him. I wonder why that is. There are many reasons why he might feel lively right now.
I just saw a Leeds equalise.
And I think you were going to say something about VAR, Marcus. I think you were going to say something about that. And Mark, what's your view on VAR? And why is it not working?
VAR is, and it actually is not my opinion. The reason the VAR isn't working is because it isn't taking into opinionation the people at the ground. And when VAR does take into consideration everyone at that stadium, which is a difficult thing to consider because we are playing in stadiums without any fans. But when they are back, when that takes into consideration what people are thinking at the ground, I think it will be better received. Whether it will work better or not, I don't know. But I don't think that's what's important. I think it's how well it is received. At the moment, it's badly received.
And what about the offsides? What's your view on that?
I think offsides must be called out by some sort of technology.
Yeah, but we were talking earlier about when you're sort of level with a player, but say you've got your nose in front or your toenail in front, does that constitute offside or not?
I would say they need to make a real change.
So he's saying, yeah, we're going to make a real change with VAR, but I think just to paraphrase what Marcus was saying, I think he's saying that, yes, well, I don't know if he's going to say it now, but what he said earlier was, if two players are more or less level, then with the advantage should go to the attacker. And the reason why I'm asking this is because I sort of agree.
I'm not saying that I think that the advantage should go either way. What I'm saying is, it ruins the game when you give it down 2 centimetres about decisions by VAR. It is killing the game. It's not exciting, it's uninteresting, no one wants to see it. I see it as a team from a perspective of someone who wants it to go the other way, and I'm still disappointed when it comes through. That's horrible.
But don't you remember there was, I mean it was a while ago, there was this directive from the referees that if a player's level with give the advantage, if you're not sure, give the advantage to the attacker. Whatever happened to that? Is VAR too defensive? What do you think on that?
I think the VAR isn't defensive or offensive. It's absolutely mathematically accurate. And I don't think that's its weakness. I think it is right, but it just... I don't think that VAR, in terms of statistics and getting the lines right, is the problem. I think that the problem is that they need to change the rule, fundamentally change the rule, and say, okay, it needs to be X amount more or X amount less for this, that, and the other. I think if you don't change that, you will never cure the issue that we have at the moment. Because
what about dangerous play? It didn't happen in the Arsenal game, but in a game of one of the games we watched that followed, there were studs high, and yet the player got a yellow card. VAR looked at it, and to me, studs high. Now, I don't mean the player intended to hurt the opponent, but studs high is dangerous, should get a red card. Thoughts?
Fair enough. Well, I think that there was a very qualified referee who reviewed that incident we were talking about and decided that actually, no, he didn't deserve a red card. His foot was high, I'll give you that, and you could say studs were high. It was the intent, I guess. I think the intent was really important. I think you saw the intent, I saw the intent, and no one I was with looked at that and thought he should get sent off. He wasn't trying to...
Well, I'm just applying the letter of the law. I would have sent him off.
I
didn't think the intent was there, but I'd have sent him off for dangerous play. I mean, whether the intent was there or not, the guy could have gone to hospital, and so for that reason, red card's coming out if I was the ref. I have to say, these were the rules that I was told about.
I think that reflects the way the game is. That's the part of the game that I love the most. I don't want it to be black and white. We always want to have that situation where we can say, okay, that guy should have gone, that guy wouldn't have been a yellow, that's a red card, that's a penalty.
What VAR's there for, to draw the line.
It's not.
Amongst other things, it's there to draw a line between, you know, what is and what isn't. And that, the studs were up and it was quite clear. And I was quite surprised they went with a yellow. I mean, I didn't want the guy to get sent off, I'll be honest. On a personal level, I didn't want him to be sent off. Not that I had a lot of investment in that game, I didn't have any, but the point is, I don't want to see players get sent off. But the rule is, if it's dangerous, you go. And that was dangerous.
If I'm totally honest, if I was in that VAR room and I'd seen that, I would have given him a red.
Yeah.
I would have. Yeah. I would have red carded him. Yeah. I'm glad they didn't, but I I would have. And that says a lot about my opinion on what is and what should be the approach to Premier League football. Because I think that, yes, you might, if we're going to have VAR, I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't think we need it. I think Premier League football was amazing.
I
don't think we needed it. It was an aspect of, it's not broke, don't fix it. That was my opinion. We've got it. Okay, fine. So now I have to adapt. Use it
sparingly or not at all, maybe?
Well, I wouldn't say use it sparingly or not at all. I would say, when should we use it? For absolute decisions that are wrong.
Goal line decisions.
We've already got ball going over the line. We've already got that. Offside. Yeah. Offside, fine. How do we do offside? Half a foot.
At the moment, it's not half a foot, is it?
It's a microscopic centimetre.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. That ruins the game. That doesn't make sense. Half a foot. And make that clear. Make that the rule. And make that the rule. So you have to be at least half a foot offside. I don't think half a foot is an outrageous statement either. I think half a foot is going to be about, what, 10 centimetres, right?
Yeah, and that's reasonable to me, isn't it?
That's reasonable. If you are 10 centimetres offside, we've got, and they will quickly be able to get it right. I hope. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that is insanely difficult. Maybe that is just as difficult as it always was. And maybe it isn't,
but it sounds reasonable to me, I have to say. And I'm not trying to agree for the sake of it. So finally, maybe it's finally, but I'm not sure. But Ozil, you did mention Ozil earlier. What would you do? Say you were Arsenal manager, say you're Arteta, you're Mikel Arteta. What would you do with Ozil? Ozil's come back, as far as we know, ready to train, ready to be part of the squad. He's on £350,000 a week. Maybe that's immaterial, but it's still a lot of money. He's got a year left on his contract. There doesn't appear to be much interest in terms of other teams that want him. So what do you do? You're the manager. How do you deal with Ozil?
I would deal exactly the way that Arteta has dealt with him. I think I actually have a lot of time for Arteta.
It's not good news, but yeah, just keep going.
I have a lot of time for Arteta. I think Arteta's come into that team and spoken individually with Ozil. I know he has. I'm sure you know he has. He's gone to him. He said to him, look, this is what I want to do with Arsenal. What do you think? And they haven't reached a kind of middle ground. So, fuck Ozil.
Ozil's basically still playing.
He's a fucking piece of shit.
He had that far, but, yeah.
No, I would say he's an absolute piece of shit, and I apologise for swearing. He's an absolute piece of shit because he has gone through how many managers now at Arsenal?
Wow, it's been through Wenger, Emery, Lundberg. So four.
He's on four Arsenal managers. And which one did he get on with?
Wenger.
Right, and that's four managers?
Four ago.
That's a while ago.
Emery, not so well. Lundberg, not so bad. I think he mostly played Lundberg. Lundberg was only there as a stopgap, so I think he mostly played under Lundberg, but still, it's not really, last season he didn't really deliver much, as in, not much at all.
And I would say that Ozil is the most underperforming big name player, in the league. Oh, with the wages, of course.
Yeah.
But I would say if you talk to me about big name players in the Premier League in the last two seasons, the biggest underperformer is Mesut Ozil. He is the big name that has not performed. Because this was a guy that was playing for Real Madrid, playing for huge teams before he signed for Arsenal. Before he signed for Real Madrid, he was one of the most exciting footballers in the world, and now he's a whinger on social media, who doesn't score a goal, he doesn't even start, he doesn't even get in the squad for Arsenal. So yeah, if I'm an Arsenal fan, I'd be absolutely furious. about him, yeah. I'd be furious. I wouldn't want this guy to ever kick a ball for Arsenal again. And Xhaka as well, I'd have a similar attitude, but much more towards Mesut Ozil. I would say this man should never kick a ball for Arsenal ever again. I want him out of the club, and whatever people want to pay his wages, fine. We'll run his contract down. Yeah, fine.
All right, one more question on Mesut. Right, now I want to put you in a different position. You are now Mesut Ozil's agent. So you're now advising Mesut Ozil as to what he should do in the future.
I think it's very clear that Mesut Ozil, his agent, has been amazing. He's one of the best. You're asking me what I would do, and I just had to tell you what he's been doing for the last 2 years.
Okay, let's figure
it's out. It's not a hard question, is it?
Yeah, but I miss it then, and I say, look, Mr. Agent, I'd like to play sometimes. Can you arrange it for me? But I'd still like to have 350,000.
In what way would a player... Listen, you want to ask me whether I understand the psychology of each player, and it's impossible to do that.
It's very difficult.
Do I understand the psychology of the agents? Yeah, I actually tell you right now, I can understand the psychology of every agent. I cannot tell you the psychology of every player. Impossible to do.
You can try.
I know what the psychology of every agent will be, and that is
maximise the money.
Exactly right. Yeah. They want their fucking paycheck. They are not performers.
But some agents are football fans, believe it or not.
Being a football fan and being a performer is not the same thing. And this is the difference, right? Footballers are entertainers. They are.
Yeah,
and we forget that. They are entertainers. They work for companies, and they are entertainers in a company that is there to entertain. Yeah. Entertainment. That is what they are. An agent is not an entertainer. An agent is a little cunt. Sorry.
It's all right.
I don't know how else to say that.
A worm, an agent is a parasite. Parasite, that's the word I was
saying. An agent is a parasite whose only objective in their whole life is to maximise their profit. They are salesmen, they are scum, and they are, that is the type of job.
Don't you think, can I just jump in there, I just want to say, don't you think we have been fed this lie that agents are scum, that agents don't care about their players? If they really, really don't care about their players, why do they care about their players? The money making side, surely. But let me just hear me out, but let's just take it a step further. If they are so parasitical, why do the players, is it because they're stupid, is that why they sign up? Because are they surrounded by sharks and they're basically choosing between one shark and another shark? Is that the world of player agents as far as you're concerned?
Yes and no. I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head to a point. Of course they're, imagine, like, right, look at Frankie de Jong moving to Barcelona. Or look at who's the lad who moved to Juventus? Defender.
I'm not following.
From Ajax,
yeah, I didn't see that one. But yeah, go ahead anyway. So that particular agent.
You've got players who are 19. You've got Alfie Haaland.
Yeah.
You've got Jadon Sancho. You've got young players who are playing well for their clubs. Of course they're easy to manipulate by a certain agent. I think the worst agent in the world for Manchester United is Mino Raiola. Do I think he's the worst agent in the world for the players he represents? No. No, I don't. I think he's causing us problems, but he is doing the best for them, or doing the best for himself.
But isn't this just a media representation of agents? It's like Gia Caravaggio, who's the Arsenal, the guy that brought Willian, who only scored 2 goals today, hit the post, he brought him in, Now, who else did he bring in? He brought in quite a few players, actually, to Arsenal. And they've mostly done quite well. So how is that a bad thing for Arsenal? I don't really understand that.
I would say that you judge the agent and you judge the player on their performance. You judge the agent on what they say. You judge the players on what they say. If they're trying to make a move, you hear that in the media. No, I judge them on what they actually say.
And what they're doing on the pitch, of course.
Yeah, I'm saying that this is in a non-football period where no one's playing.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Yeah, of course. But I'm saying if you're going to judge whether or not Bellerin, okay, let's make it Arsenal. Bellerin is going to go to Barcelona. That matters about what Bellerin wants to do.
Yeah.
There's going to be an agent that comes in. And you're not going to hear X, Y, and Z about what each person says.
Yeah, it's not made known to us, right?
No, and that is when football works well.
Mm.
When football works badly is when you've got Manchester United going for Jadon Sancho. That, you can get me on record, that is not going to happen. Because Manchester United have failed in every massive signing that they've attempted since Ferguson left. Every single one that there was their main thing. They had Sergio Ramos. They had you know, the big name signing of the summer, and they always fail. They will fail with this one as well. I'm certain of it. But what I'm saying before that is that, you know, it matters about that the agents have a lot more say than the managers.
Yeah.
I would say that there are managers, agents that have a lot more input into signing for Arsenal than anyone else.
Wow. Things are getting very entertaining around here. We're getting a little sidetracked, but we're not going to discuss it, but there's a lot of interest in what's going on around us, let's put it like that. So on that note, I think we'll leave it, shall we?
Yeah, happy to leave it, oh yeah.
But we made a lot of good points, we like to think, at least. All right, till next time, maybe.
Adios. Cheers.
One other thing I promised to speak about is the situation regarding Eddie Nketiah. Some people think he should have started the season as a striker. Of course, it was Lacazette who scored. So I wouldn't think if Lacazette keeps scoring, he's going to be dropped. He might be dropped for the occasional game just to get a rest. But what do I think of this situation? I'll ask myself this. Nketiah scored a hat-trick recently for England's under-21s against Kosovo. The danger is we shouldn't read too much into those international games at under-21 level. Mainly, the reason why, in two words, Francis Jeffers. Let's face it, when Jeffers signed for Arsenal one under the Wenger regime, I, like many others, was very pleased that we'd brought in a player for the future. But unfortunately, as things turn out, he didn't actually score that many goals for Arsenal for one reason or another. So let's not get too carried away with Nketiah. Lacazette, for me, is the man that should be the striker for Arsenal, and I don't want to see him leave. Nketiah, he's a decent player. I'd like him in the squad, but should he be a regular starter? I think if you look at his first team stats, it doesn't really bear thinking about putting him in place of Lacazette. Although statistics don't tell the whole story, and Nketiah does get around the park a little bit more than Lacazette, although I wouldn't say Lacazette's lazy by any means. So yeah, I'm happy with the situation right now. I would take, obviously, keep Lacazette as a primary striker up front, and then have Nketiah as a possible replacement should anything untoward happen to Lacazette, God forbid.